You're listening to Pull the Line, a tattooer-created podcast about respect and tradition.
Welcome back to Pull the Line. Today we have a very special guest, Miss Lauren Dirksen. Lauren, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Doing pretty good. How you doing today, Rich?
I'm doing good. So painted a bunch today, so I felt good.
What'd you paint?
Mucking around with some biomechanical shit.
Oh, getting prepared for that appointment with Guy, huh?
Yeah. Felt like biomech today.
Yeah. Wish I had that somewhere in my DNA, somewhere in my brain. Oh, yeah. I'm just feeling very biomech. So, Lauren, the first question I like to ask people is, how old are you? How long have you been tattooing? And how did you discover tattooing?
I am 28. I'll be 29 in May. I have been tattooing for a little under 3.5 years. Started tattooing in November of 2020. So I'm a COVID baby. And I don't really know if I could say for sure how I discovered tattooing. I do remember being in like third or fourth grade, and they did a whole like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I did mine on, I wanted to be a tattoo artist. I'm just gonna blame it on the media, I guess, probably. Because my parents didn't have tattoos. I was never really around anybody who had tattoos as a kid, but it just always fascinated me.
I'm sorry, I just have to say, I can't believe you've only been tattooing for like 3.5 years. You're so fucking good.
Thank you. I do get that a lot. I definitely take that humbly. I'm very guilty of still having hella imposter syndrome, but I've learned to be proud of it. I still have a lot to learn though.
For being so new to the industry and to the tattooing, your line work is impeccable.
Thank you. That's something I've always been the most confident in. I cannot tell you how many pieces of paper I have laying around in my stash of art that is just line work. Honestly never really even finished most pieces of art until I started tattooing. It's just, I don't know what it is about it. It's just my favorite medium, and I'm way less stressed out doing a tattoo than if you handed me a piece of paper and some watercolor and asked me to paint flash. Like, it takes me so much longer to do mediums like that than it does to do a tattoo.
I feel that.
I feel that way as well, actually.
So how did you end up getting your apprenticeship?
It was kind of just luck, I guess. I had an apprenticeship when I was like 19. I started hanging around tattoo shops when I was like 17. I dated a tattoo artist, and you know, of course that didn't go super great, but kind of exposed me to the industry early on. And the shop that he was in had an artist, and like, I just kind of like ran into him a bunch of times. He was bitching and moaning about the shop, blah, blah, blah. And I was friends with a shop owner who had just lost an artist to moving out of state. And so she was just there at the shop by herself. She's a piercer. And so at first this guy gave me good vibes, and I like put in a good word with the owner. One thing led to another. He offered me an apprenticeship. As it turns out, he's a massive dick, and he basically just wanted a free secretary. So I kind of just put it on the back burner for a while. I had a lot of people that were just like, oh, you should just, you know, you've got a machine, you've got all this other shit, like you should just do it out of your house. And I didn't want to be that guy that was doing that. I wanted to do it right. So I spent a lot of years in between just getting tattooed. I went to a lot of conventions, just like as a client, and kind of started networking that way. I was really annoying. I would pick people's brains while they were tattooing me. And when I moved down to Kentucky, I started going to Tattoo Charlie's for piercing because they were the only APP studio around here. And I was already kind of used to that from where I'm from. And the head piercer asked me if I wanted a counter position, like 3 weeks before COVID. So I started there doing that. And then when we reopened from COVID, I started kind of like doodling at the desk, and a couple of the artists were just like, you should ask Buddy, the owner, about an apprenticeship. So I did, and he liked my portfolio, and I was an apprentice for like 3 months. And then the person that was supposed to be mentoring me decided to quit. And I just kind of got thrown into the fire, honestly.
Trial by fire.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because I've had two mentors technically, but I give all of the credit for what I know to all of the friends that I've made in the industry throughout the years, because they have taught me so much more than those two assholes ever could. So
do you want to, I'm curious on who it is. You want to not mention his name? You can text me if you like.
The first guy I will absolutely call out because he's a massive dickhead. His name is Nick Trammell.
Okay.
I have no idea if he's still tattooing. Like I said, I was like 19. So, you know, this was a decade ago. When I worked with him, he was in Bloomington, Illinois. And then shortly after, so basically he fired me because I caught him doing a drug deal for a tattoo. After the owner had left, and these two girls walked in, they wanted like words on their butts or something like that. And he traded them for pills. And I like watched it all go down and was just like, I don't love this. And this is on like a Saturday. The shop was closed on Sunday. He calls me on Monday and he was just like, hey, like, have you talked to the owner yet? And I was just like, no. And he was like, cool, cool, cool. And then the next time I went in, he basically told me that I didn't have what it took. I wasn't dedicated to it enough. Like all these bullshit excuses as to why he thought that it was justified to let me go as his apprentice. And then within weeks, he was fired, because obviously firing me wasn't going to keep me from telling the owner what had happened. And he pissed off some clients, and it ultimately led to a bunch of back and forth on the business Facebook page and like threats and all this other stuff. He did not handle it professionally. And one of the girl's boyfriends threw a rock through the window of the shop and busted the main like glass on the window. And he turned around after he got fired and he tried to spew a bunch of bullshit saying that I threw the rock through the window as like a way to frame him or something. It was just this whole mess. And then he like fucked off down to Florida or something like that. I honestly stopped caring after he left town.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Perfect place to go if you like drugs.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he was a absolute nutcase. I did one tattoo under him. He just like came at me one day and was just like, you're going to do a tattoo today. Like, okay. Did this tiny little flower on my ankle. And then after that, I was like, you know, like, hey man, what's next? Like, you know, I want to keep progressing. And he's like, you need to calm the fuck down. You're not ready yet. Like, okay, cool, I guess.
So did you apprentice at Louisville or Lexington?
Lexington.
Okay. Then I might not have known the person that quit.
Honestly, we had, at that time, two of them left. And then shortly after, we had two other artists get fired. So there was like a huge turnover. There was actually a point, like I said, I started tattooing like actual clients November 1st of 2020. And then by, like there was a brief moment the following spring where I was the only tattooer. And then we had one of our guys come back. He had moved back home to Eastern Kentucky to take care of his family during the pandemic. So he came back, but it's kind of funny to me at this point, because like I've been there for 3.5 years. Well, I've been there for 4 years at this point, but I've been tattooing for 3.5 years, and I'm actually the most senior tattoo artist that's at that shop.
Wow.
Because everybody else came on board after me.
That's so sick how you like very much so. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're fine. Oh, I was just going to say, like, everybody that was there when I started left or got fired, and then everybody that's there now came on after me.
Yeah, it's funny how the world works sometimes. That's awesome how you like very much so like went up the ranks though. That's, I don't know. It's, and I also think it's wonderful how you mentioned how much you learned from your friends. Cause we just did an episode with Matt Stolzenberg, Matty Darkside. And he said something very similar, you know, along the lines of, you know, he had wonderful friends in tattooing that he made that taught him so much more than, you know, his quote unquote mentors.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's kind of one of those things, like, I know, especially recently, I've seen a lot of people, a lot of shop structures where they take on apprentices and it's like a shop apprentice. And I'm not necessarily like, I don't necessarily agree with that. Like, I think that it is important to like have focus on one person, especially when you're like new as an apprentice.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you're not going to do everything the same way as one person. So I think it's still important to like be able to keep an open mind, question like, hey, why are you doing this tattoo this way? Because I've seen someone else do a similar thing a different way. And just kind of getting that like logic and reasoning from people. And it kind of has always helped me be like, okay, that makes sense.
Right.
I'm going to try that, but maybe a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I agree. I agree on both sides of the coin. Our other co-host, Lisa, up at the Skinny Buddha in Green Bay, they like to do a thing where the apprentices that they have, which they've actually stopped taking on apprentices with this most recent one that they have, but they like to do a thing where the apprentice will shadow under everybody for a certain period of time. And I think there definitely can be a benefit to that, like you were saying.
Yeah, I think it's done right.
Yeah, totally, totally. Rather than just like, oh, hey, does everybody want free labor for a little bit?
Yeah, because I've definitely seen that happen before. I actually went to high school with a guy that got an apprenticeship like that, and he basically was expected to just shadow everybody. And there was like 5 artists in the studio. And you could tell in his work when he started tattooing that he had 5 guys behind him while he was doing this tattoo saying like, no, do it this way. No, do it this way.
Yeah.
And his work suffered for it.
Yeah.
Cause it's just confusing to be hearing it one way from this guy and one way from that guy. And like, ah, shit, what do I do?
Right. I was just going to say, I worked at a shop where we had an apprentice, you know, that he was supposedly the shop's apprentice, and everyone was telling him different information, you know, and I said, I'm done with this, because it's just massively confusing. I like what Lisa's doing though, with like, you work with this artist for this period of time, then you work with this artist for this period of time, you know, because when I taught Lisa how to tattoo, I literally told her, I'm like, look, I'm going to show you how I do it, but you're going to find your own way. But
exactly
what you said, like when you just have like a gaggle of artists bombarding you with different information and different ways of doing things, mm-hmm. it just can't be productive. The guy that, you know, the guy who I'm specifically talking about, he's doing really well for himself. He's turned into a decent tattoo artist, so that's cool. But it was really hard to watch.
Yeah.
So you're right. It I think if it's done a certain way, I think it'll work. But any other way, it's just chaos.
Yeah, continuity is super important, but also it's important to know that like there is never one right way to do something. There is definitely a wrong way. There's always a wrong way, but there's always, you know, multiple right ways of doing something. Just depends on what it looks like for a certain person.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I definitely understand how more often than not, it's probably just not going to help. Unless, like you said, you know, it's it's structured properly, but it's one of those
things. if there's a plan to it, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, because again, you're gonna want to learn from other artists. Because on that same note, I think it's bullshit when people take on an apprentice and they're like, you're my apprentice, you're not allowed to talk to anyone else. Like, right. What are they gonna learn from that?
Right.
Yeah, totally. And I think a lot of it, really, a lot of the issues in general boil down to what is the reasoning behind someone wanting to have an apprentice to begin with, mm-hmm. you know? Because, I mean, the place that I grew up in, the shop that I came up in, it was very much so, we would like someone to scrub tubes and sweep
yeah.
and mop the floor. And, like, I guess if you learn to become a tattooer, that's cool. But, you know, X, Y, Z, whatever.
Right.
So were you always into art then? I can assume from how you've spoken about it so far.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that was one thing that my parents always were really good about supporting, was just like letting me draw and shit. And my dad was a carpenter. So instead of having like a plastic playhouse in my yard, my dad actually built like a little shed basically in my yard. and that was like my playhouse. And he let me like paint all over the walls, and like when my parents got divorced, the house that he moved into, instead of putting a floor down in my room, he just left the subfloor and was just like draw on it.
That's so fucking sick.
Yeah, and like art was definitely always my favorite class. But again, it kind of just goes back to, for really no reason that I can think of, like even an art class in school, like any time that I could turn an art project into like a traditional style piece, I would.
Really?
I mean, mm-hmm.
Traditional was like on your radar as like a kid in high school?
Yep.
What? That's so cool. I fucking wish I would have had any kind of idea of like American traditional style art when I was younger. I wasn't an artist before getting into tattooing, admittedly. And now that I have sunk so much of myself into it, I wish a little earlier on I would have just had that on my radar somewhere. I feel like I would have gotten into it way sooner had I just been familiar with the art.
Yeah, it's always been my favorite style. And I don't know, again, like being from a really small town and like not having a whole lot of exposure to tattoos, I imagine that probably what I was exposed to was like, you know, Ed Hardy and Sailor Jerry and like the typical trad shit that you see on like a lot of commercial stuff.
Yeah. So getting into tattooing, what were some of the obstacles that you faced coming into it? I mean, obviously, aside from the pandemic.
I don't know. That one, that's kind of a hard one for me to answer, because I feel like I kind of got lucky in having an easy and kind of quick transition into being a tattooer. I mean, obviously there was all those years in between my apprenticeships where, like, you know, it's still what I wanted to do, but I didn't have the opportunity to do it. But I don't know that I would really even call that like an obstacle. It was just something that I knew I had to be patient. But I can't really say that I can admit that I haven't faced a lot of the obstacles that I know a lot of people have.
Okay. That's fair. That's totally fair. And I mean, although, like you said, you know, the transition seemed to be, you know, pretty seamless. You did still, you know, start from very step one and found your way into where you are. That's so sick. Did you?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, that's always how I wanted to do it. Like, I wanted to do it right. I knew that paying for an apprenticeship wasn't the answer. I knew that I wanted to try to get in with somebody who did what I wanted to do. And I ultimately didn't end up getting that. But again, I think as someone who has pretty much all traditional tattoos, and like I said, I picked everybody's brain, and I think that kind of made up for not really having a mentor that does what I do.
Yeah, I can totally see that. That's a very fair point. And a great way to do it. I mean, I always tell everybody that asks me how to find an apprenticeship, I always tell them, find people that do the work that you really like and just get tattooed by them. You know, watch it, see it, pick their brains.
Mm-hmm. Well, it helps you build a rapport with them too, because I mean, you got all these people on social media that are just like, do you want an apprentice? And I'm just like, who are you? You know, there's a lot about the old school that it's okay if it dies, you know, the hazing and all that bullshit. But at the end of the day, I mean, if you're going to take somebody on and be their mentor, it should be somebody that you like, and it should be somebody that you respect.
Right.
And that you want to pass your career off to.
I listened to a podcast that Freddie Corbin did once, and he talked about how, you know, in the, I guess, fucking what now, like 40 years of that guy's been tattooing, he's had one apprentice, and he made a really good point. You know, when you're passing the torch of tattooing to somebody, not only should you be super mindful of, you know, why you want to do that, like why they are a good fit for it, but you should also feel that you yourself are in a good place to do that.
Absolutely. You know,
that you're not just blindly getting somebody into something, which obviously is how a ton of people have gotten into tattooing. I mean, my mentor was very fresh into tattooing when he brought me in, and it was, I mean, a lot of things could have been done better because of that. Because of, you know, kind of being overzealous and jumping into the deep end pretty quickly. But hearing him talk about that as someone who has such a stature in tattooing and has been around for so long, that really stuck out to me. But I guess that kind of also bleeds into another question that I had similar to that. Did you have to make any kinds of sacrifices coming into your apprenticeship or finding your way into the door at the shop that you started at as a front desk person?
Again, not as many as most people would. I'm extremely grateful for the opportunity that I was given at Tattoo Charlie's, because one of the things that our owner offers to all apprentices is an hourly wage. So I didn't pay my way in, and I also didn't have to starve myself to get through my apprenticeship. You know, it wasn't a huge salary by any means. You know, I was making $10 an hour, but being able to make some money while I was there definitely helped make it possible. I did keep my serving job at the beginning of it, but some bullshit went down there after reopening from COVID. They pulled a bunch of stuff with like tip pooling, and it just wasn't good for my mental health. So I quit. and I mean, my husband was a huge support system too. You know, we had multiple conversations beforehand about, you know, he's got a factory job and he hates it, but he knows that in order to make a living, he's got to put up with it until he's able to retire there. And he basically was just like, you know, if at least one of us can do something that doesn't make us miserable, then we'll do what we have to do.
That's so fucking important. Having a good partner is so important. So conducive to having a good apprenticeship and or just introduction in general to tattooing. Yeah.
I gotta like say that I do think Buddy is a really good shop owner. He really knows what he's doing.
That's so fucking cool that you got a wage as an apprentice.
I mean, the way that it's looked at is like, no, it's not necessarily a job that you can just apply for, but at the same time, like, it's kind of one of those things. Like, I've never agreed with paying for an apprenticeship. That's, you know, that's one of those arguments that I've been a part of quite a few times, where people just are so stuck in that mindset that, you know, oh, if I'm going to teach you, then you should pay me. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you look at any other trade work, electricians, plumbers, they take on apprentices, and those people make a small wage and they work for the trade.
Right.
So I would have been more than happy to work for free and pay my way with dedication and doing what I needed to do. But I really appreciate the fact that Buddy is the type of person to say, well, that's great and all, but if I can afford to pay you $10 an hour to be an apprentice, then you shouldn't have to starve.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't have to work 16-hour days between two jobs just to get your bills paid. And I think that that's really awesome of him to do.
Yeah, that's so fucking cool. And I agree. I mean, I know a couple of people who have charged an apprentice, one apprentice, for their apprenticeship, and it wasn't a wildly absurd amount of money, and they did actually roll it back into getting a power supply for them and getting a couple of machines and whatever, but like 99% of the time, it's bullshit. I mean, I know somebody that charged a kid 10 grand for an apprenticeship and fired him after 3 or 4 months. That's just crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, it's another one of those things that it's not that every person who does it is a piece of shit. You know, if you have a good structure behind it, if you have a good reason for it, you know, if it's, hey, you know, I want you to dedicate this amount of money toward your supplies or whatever, then great. I mean, again, I knew that I wanted to kind of do it the old school way of like, I'm here to prove myself and, you know, I want you to see that out of me.
Yeah.
Totally. And I mean, I didn't have $5,000 to pay for an apprenticeship because I see so many people that go into those paid apprenticeships and it's just like the quote unquote mentor that takes those people on is just looking for that paycheck. And those people are not getting what they need out of that apprenticeship.
Yeah.
So I kind of viewed it that way and felt like, okay, I could go offer somebody all this money to teach me and they might say yes, but are they saying yes because they want to teach me or are they saying yes because they want my money? Yeah. And I wanted to find someone who wanted to teach me.
Yeah. I mean, cause you always have to ask the question of like, well, what is the person's motive behind this? I mean, if you're only focused on a monetary value with educating someone, it's not coming from a good place most of the time.
Right.
Like, majority of the time, I would say. My apprenticeship is the same way, where I paid my dues through labor and through, you know, dedicating myself to it. And
yeah,
I was so surprised to learn that paying for an apprenticeship was even a thing. Whenever that was that I found that out, I was like, what? So this is a more niche question that we like to bring up from time to time. Do you think the tattooing has affected your mental health in any way? Because I know personally for me, I was just under a certain set of circumstances around the time that I got my apprenticeship where I was dealing with a lot of things that I didn't quite get to process. But I feel like tattooing was super heavy, like a very, very heavy thing for me to take on personally.
Yeah, I could agree with that. I mean, there's definitely, I think there was a balance of it. You know, it's stressful in its own form. I definitely think it's been beneficial to me in the sense that I don't wake up every day dreading to go to work like I have in previous jobs. But at the same time, I think that there is still that level of like imposter syndrome that does affect my mental health. I know I've talked to Rich about this, like when we worked Milwaukee last year, but, like whenever I go to do guest spots or I go to do conventions, I'm super grateful for the opportunity to like network and meet new artists and stuff like that. But at the same time, like, I think just that idea of, am I good enough to be here gets to me. when I'm like packing up and getting ready to leave. So I've definitely had a couple of moments where I've like really, really struggled to get myself on the road and like going to these conventions. But at the same time, I'm kind of at a point with it where I just force myself to work through it because I know that when I get there, I'm going to have a good time.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
You know, unfortunately, the imposter syndrome doesn't really go away. I've been doing this like over 3 decades and I still like, fuck, they're going to find me out that I'm not that good. You know, but I think that's a, it's a positive, I think, because you're not cocky. You're not like, yeah, right. I'm the shit. You know, fuck, so glad I don't think like that. And I'm glad the people that I surround myself don't think like that because we're all learning. We're all open to learning. Yeah. And I was going to say earlier when you guys were talking about traveling and stuff, man, like, and learning in the apprenticeship as your friends, I think traveling is ideal for learning. You know, you go to different shops, you go to tattoo with other artists and they really show you like, oh, that's interesting. There's so many things that I've picked up just by traveling and working at other shops that I would have never have considered. So yeah, I mean, I think it's fantastic. I think it's fantastic that you talk yourself out of freaking out and not going. That's cool.
Yeah. I can't say that I've won that battle every single time. There's been a couple of conventions that I have backed out of. But I think that also plays into like just having life piling up on top of that.
Right.
Yeah, I struggled with that for a long time too. The idea of like, am I good enough to be here? You know, rolling up to a guest spot or something and being worried that I was like going to get made fun of for using my like pen style machine or or whatever inks or whatever tattoos I did, like, oh man, they're gonna find me out. They're gonna know.
Yeah, and I mean it's still very, I think it's still really new to me too, like that people know who I am. Like that was probably one of the hardest things to like hit me is, you know, I have people come in and be like, oh, somebody dropped your name on like this Facebook group I'm in, and I'm just like, people know my name, what? Like that's fucking weird, because I'm from like just such a small town where everybody knows everybody's fucking business. And, you know, like, I'm an only child. I don't have any cousins. And, like, I went to school with all of these families that, like, everybody knows everybody. Everybody's related. And then I'm just here. I'm just this freaky little scene kid in the middle of a cornfield that everybody's just like, who the fuck is this bitch? So it's very strange to have, like, that impact from social media, too. And it's like, it's kind of scary. It's just like, you know, you go and you network and you meet new artists and that's really cool. But now they know who I am. They're going to like follow me on Instagram and see my work and critique me and talk shit about, you know, a tattoo that I didn't do very well on to their fucking friends or something. It's just, I don't know. I think that's definitely been like the hardest thing for me to try to like talk myself off the ledge about.
I think it's interesting that you go right to they're going to talk shit about you, because I've seen your work. I've watched you work. There's nothing to talk shit about. There's the style that you do. And again, you nail it. It's the line work is the key to like American traditional to me, and some of the shading and you kind of got it already. It's only going to get better.
Yeah.
Hashtag not kissing your ass. Just being honest.
You're so hip using a hashtag, Rich.
Is that even done anymore?
Yeah, it is. I definitely understand that too, though. I mean, I can't say that I necessarily come from a small town. Racine is not the smallest place, but it feels very small town. And as a fellow scene kid. Like, oh no, I'm used to being the young dork of every group that I'm within, and you know, where I live, everybody knows everybody, and nobody really goes out to do much of anything. And social media has really, at least for tattooing, has allowed that kind of mold to be broken, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, leaving where I grew up and like moving to a new area, I guess I didn't set myself up to expect to be somewhere new and have so many people know who I am.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, who there, we were talking about this the other day on one of the other episodes we did, you know, there's so many things that you don't get taught. Or like that these days, you know, don't get taught because these things haven't been around for the longest time, like social media and, you know, being perceived by others and and assessed, you know, it's not quite the same as like teaching someone why you should use this kind of rubber band or this kind of needle grouping or whatever. You know, these are very new nuances. When you first started tattooing, were you a walk-in warrior? Like, I'm assuming, like, anything that comes in the door, you're just...
Yeah. I mean, again, I was in a little bit of a unique situation because when I started, there was five artists. And by the time I started tattooing, I was one of three. And both of the other two are the ones that ended up getting fired. So, you know, being at a shop that's as well established as Tattoo Charlie's, I mean, definitely helped me a lot with that. You know, I had my period for like a month or so of, you know, having friends and family come in, and kind of after I started taking clients, it was just a matter of just getting stuff booked through the shop. I'm really not ever been walk-in based. I mean, I definitely was booked up at first with like, you know, birthmark flowers and script and handwriting and stuff like that. But I feel like I got really lucky in being able to book a lot of different things through the shop. Cause we get a lot of people that reach out like through the email, the website, the Facebook, whatever, that don't have an artist preference. They just know they want to get tattooed at Tattoo Charlie's. So I think that was kind of another thing that I got kind of lucky on, because I didn't really have that period of sitting around and doing nothing for months, trying to get my shit figured out. But I would definitely, I mean, I had days where it was just back to back to back. I would do like 7 or 8 tattoos in a day. I still have those days sometimes, but
yeah. That's one of the reasons I wanted to move down to Kentucky and work at Tattoo Charlie's. I love days like that where it's just,
yeah,
like, oh, you put your head down, work, like, oh, shit, shift's over. Cool.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, I'm the type of artist who, like, I don't book myself a lunch. Like, I don't, if I'm there, I'm trying to work, I'm trying to make money. So I put my appointments back to back. I mean, I always kind of overestimate a little bit if I can on time. Because, you know, you never know if somebody's going to be 20 minutes late or they're going to change their design at the last second or whatever. But
when I had teal over the gray. Inside joke.
Don't remind me. You mentioned coming from a small town. Where are you from?
I grew up in Secor, Illinois. The population on the sign says 400 people.
Oh, wow.
And I would say at least 250 of those people live out in the country.
Wow. Yeah. Holy shit. That's a super small town.
Right.
Yep. 5 blocks by 7 blocks. There's a few stop signs. It was technically considered a village. That's how small it was.
Mm.
No grocery store, no gas station. We had a bar and a post office.
What? Strong local economy.
Yeah. Yep. So we had to go, you know, 10 miles either direction for a grocery store. I went to school in a different town. I think the school that I went to was a combination of 5 small towns. And I was part of a larger graduating class of 83 people.
Ooh. Oh, shit. Holy fuck.
In Milwaukee, I had study halls with 200 people in it. That's insane.
Yeah, when I was in third grade, we consolidated with one of the quote unquote bigger of the next towns over. I don't know, probably population of like 1,500, 2,000 people. And we consolidated with their school, and that's when we started getting classes upwards in like the 80s. They might be a little bit bigger now, but it's still a pretty small community.
That's fucking wild. When I was in high school, there was 2,500 kids in my high school. It's the population of one of those towns.
Right. Yep.
So I got a question. one of our favorite questions we ask is, what are some of the parts of tattooing culture that you think should be maintained and stuff that can just be kind of left? You kind of touched on stuff that could be left behind before, but what do you think we could keep? And what should we do?
I mean, really, I think, again, that just like that respect for the craft is something that I see being lost more and more. And that's I think something that is important for people to kind of step back and think about a little bit more. You know, you have all of these apprentice farms is what I call them, where they, you know, just hire on 5 or 6 people off the street and don't teach them anything, but then they go and charge them 60 or 70% commission because they're just trying to make money off these kids.
Right.
You've got all these people that are, you know, not even a year in and they're sick of being told what to do and they go and open up a private studio. And it just feels like they do it because they think that they're cool for it and that they don't actually respect what they're doing. And that's something that I've seen over the last, you know, decade, 12 years that kind of hurts a little bit to see that there is so many people out there that just because tattooing has become more popular, you know, Ink Master and social media and all these other things that people just think that, well, I can do that, so I'm gonna do that. And it's right. Like, well, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
They're just doing it for the title and the glam.
Yeah, they're doing it so they can go to parties and say, I'm a tattoo artist, but they don't really care about the quality of work that they're putting on people. And then it makes it really hard because, you know, one thing that I see a lot of is I see a lot of people come into the shop that have had really shitty experiences with other shops, with private studios. And, you know, they went in confident and thinking that they were going to get the tattoos that they wanted and they were disappointed. And then it ruins their trust for other artists because they're just like, well, I thought I could trust this person, but then they fucked me up. And I want to get it fixed or covered or whatever, but I'm scared to. And I'm scared it's just going to turn out like shit again. And it sucks. It sucks to see that. You know, I don't think that it should be this like underground, let's all be pirates again and make tattooing illegal again or anything like that. But I feel like it's become a little bit too mainstream, a little too fast, and kind of given a lot of people this sense of entitlement that, you know, I can go and buy a machine and I can buy some silicone skin and I can figure it out. I can do this. I don't care if you tell me that I can't.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and I think a lot of people forget too, like a lot of people that, you know, say things like, oh, make tattooing this or that again. I think people oftentimes don't realize that like when tattooing was in those places where there was a lot of struggle, it wasn't because tattooers wanted that. That was just the circumstances that tattooing was within, you know, with it being illegal or not being popular. You know, for a long time, a lot of tattooers had other jobs. They were bartenders or they were butchers or they were mailmen or milkmen or carpenters or, you know, it wasn't. I'm sure everybody that was within tattooing in those times would have loved to only tattoo for a career, you know, like a lot of us are so lucky to do these days, but it's not like people fucking willed those circumstances.
Absolutely. And I mean, I don't think that we should go back to that by any means because it's awesome. I mean, it's amazing that we can do this for a living.
Yeah.
Like I can be a tattoo artist for a full-time job and make more money than I've ever made in my life doing it and be comfortable. And that's fucking fantastic. But at the same time, I feel like part of those hardships helped build that respect for the industry. So in completely losing all of that struggle because people can buy a machine on Amazon and just start fucking tattooing if they want to, we've lost a lot of that respect for the craft.
I think another thing too that you mentioned earlier, that like you have stacks and stacks and stacks of drawings that you drew long before you even started tattooing to practice tattooing, even though you weren't tattooing. No, like the people that we're talking about, the ones that we should like kind of end, they don't do that. They just get the machine and go right to skin. Like, no. You got to fucking draw for a couple of thousand hours before you even attempt to put a needle to the skin. But there's like, I can do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, sometimes we add a damn good artist to the industry out of it. I mean,
right.
I would be lying if I said I wasn't mostly self-taught, but I still tried to do it the right way. I didn't just get, like I said, I had so many people that were just like, oh, you can do it. Just start fucking doing it. I'm like, I'm not trying to be like a kitchen wizard about this shit. Like because I wanted to come up and have the ability to earn respect from the other artists. And I feel like a lot of these people that are just like, fuck it, I can do it, they don't care that other artists don't respect them, because people want tattoos. They're able to do a tattoo for probably cheaper than we charge, and they still make money. So they don't give a fuck what we think. And I at the end of the day, there's nothing that we're really probably going to ever be able to do to change that. But
it's like Pandora's box. It's been opened.
Right. The term that we talked about it with I don't remember who it was. We talked about it, like the genie's out of the bottle. You can't put that genie back in the bottle.
Yeah. And I mean, we over the last few years, everybody gets on this high horse about gatekeeping, and it's just like, well, sometimes certain things should be gatekept.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. My fiance and I know somebody who, they're very good at drawing people. They're very, very good at drawing people. It's insane. They're the level of talent that they have with drawing figures. And I remember them coming to me once, very specifically, asking how they could get a tattoo apprenticeship. And I gave them the spiel that I give everybody about, getting tattooed somewhere, creating a rapport, easing your way into, creating a friendship with somebody, yada yada yada, whatever. And I told them, I was like, I'll show you how to spit shade some flash if you want, because if you do that and have like some flash sheets that you can bring in, you'll really get somebody's attention. Like if you go out of your way to like learn that, I'm sure anybody would be willing to at least hear you out and have a conversation with you for 5 or 10 minutes at minimum. And and I sat down with them, showed them, and they tried, and they were kind of able to do it, and I tried getting them to paint with me more, and they just wouldn't do it. I even went out of my way to get them like supplies, like a whole set of PH Martins, some brushes, some Arches paper, like here's your own stuff, fuck with it. Mm-hmm. And they kind of, they kind of cut Kirsten and I off and eventually bought a tattoo machine of their own, and I'm going to start tattooing my friends and myself. And nothing has ever come of that. But I remember having a conversation with Kirsten about it one day, and I was like, they want to make money, and they want to make art. And being an artist, I totally understand that feeling, but they don't want to make a career out of making art and making tattoos. They want to
have... And a lot of people don't want to make the sacrifices that are necessary to make a career out of art.
Right. Even if it's not tattooing, just being an artist by trade in any form is so fucking hard.
Yeah.
Not to sound like a boomer, because I'm not a boomer, I'm Gen X. A lot of people just don't want to put the work in.
Yeah.
You know, how often do you hear like, man, I wish I could draw like you? I'm like, you could, but are you willing to like literally sit at a table for hours and hours and hours for years and just draw stuff? Are you going to practice? Are you going to try? Are you going to push yourself? Are you going to, you know, try to explore? Are you just going to like, I can draw a heart. I can do it, you know? And then, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I always get a little offended when someone's like, I wish I could draw like you. Like, you're lucky you were born with that skill. I'm like, I've given up so much shit in my life. I've sacrificed social lives, you know, time with people, time, like, just so I can get better at art. Shit, I still do it. I've been tattooing over 3 decades. I still practice. I still put the time in and just draw. Yeah. A lot of people aren't willing to do that. And that's, I don't know. I forgot what I was getting at, but I'll get off
in the work. Putting in the work, keeping your nose on the grindstone.
Yeah.
Right.
I feel similarly. I mean, a lot of times people come in and, you know, I'll have a design put together for them. They're like, oh my God, I love that. That's so sick. And then they'll say something similar where they're like, oh, I wish I could do that. And I tell them, like, I've only been drawing 5 years. They're like, oh, how long have you been tattooing? Coming up on 5 years.
Coming up on 5 years.
Like, what do you mean? How? I'm like, well, it's a learned skill. It's like singing, you know? Singing is also a learned skill. It's another one of those things that you can just dedicate time into learning the craft of, and if you want it bad enough, you can have a semblance of you know, proficiency.
Right.
Yep.
But no, you're right, Rich. Definitely. I think people have gotten rid of the idea of wanting to work towards something like that. You know, chop wood and carry water to chop wood.
Get off my lawn.
Well, and I think a lot of that comes with just, you know, at the risk of also sounding like a grumpy old lady, the new generation has just kind of been taught that, you know, you ask and people say yes.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of that taught entitlement of, well, if you want it, then you should be able to have it. And people just don't want to hear no for an answer, you know? Because, I mean, I've got a spiel too when people reach out to me, and I always tell them kind of the same thing. Like, you know, you want to find somebody that you want to learn from. You know, I don't want to go learn from a realism artist how to do traditional tattoos.
Right. Right.
And if I want to do realism tattoos, I'm not going to go learn from a traditional artist. Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you tell people to do that, and, you know, I had a interaction with somebody through the shop Facebook, and, you know, I'll admit I was a little bit overzealous in my response, being that it was through the shop social media, and I kind of responded as if it was a direct message. But, you know, she messaged, asked about apprenticeships, and said, you know, I've been tattooing at my house, and the state won't license me and blah, 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 until I get an apprenticeship. It's like, well, yeah, because what you're doing is illegal. And I gave her advice, and she got mad, and she took it as if I was telling her that she should have the privilege of already having her foot in a door. I was like, no, I'm trying to tell you how to get your foot in the door. And unfortunately, one of those things that you don't want to hear is that you have to put that machine down. You have to stop tattooing people out of your house if you want to earn yourself a respectable apprenticeship. Because I don't want to unteach you all of the bullshit that you've taught yourself.
Because
the chances that you're doing anything right are very low. Not impossible, but it's pretty low. And at the end of the conversation, she was just like, well, I'm not putting the machine down because this is what I'm passionate about. I'm just like, you know, if you could just grab onto that passion a little bit and let go of that hard-headedness a little bit, you might have a chance.
Yeah.
But if you're just going to argue the first time that you ask somebody for an apprenticeship, then you're not going to get anywhere.
Right. No one's going to go out of your way to teach someone who's argumentative and like, no, that's how you do it. Like, you don't know. Just be quiet, listen.
You know, if you already knew how to do it, then you wouldn't be asking for help.
Right.
Right.
Putting all the work in and stuff we're talking about is a good segue to what other kind of art do you do other than tattooing and tattoo flash? What are the mediums do you use, if at all?
I've been messing around lately with mirrors.
Mirrors?
Still kind of struggling. Yeah, like painting mirrors. I've still been kind of struggling to like get it right because I am not good with oil paint. And I know that like the easy answer is enamel. And I'm just not good at using enamel.
Did you say murals or mirrors?
Mirrors.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. I had to make sure.
Shiny reflective. Yeah.
Shiny reflective. We got it.
Mm-hmm. So I've been messing around with that. I've sold a few and I've been able to like basically use acrylic and then use Mod Podge to like seal it and they seem like they're going to hold up. I've been trying to, my main struggle right now is I'm trying to find a way to clear coat the acrylic paint in a way that retains the reflectiveness of the mirror behind the painting, but also seals the paint. And I'm not finding a good answer for that. Because like, I've tried a couple of like super crystal clear spray paint and they still dull the mirror. Mm-hmm. I've gotten decent feedback from like, you know, Instagram story polls and shit like that, where people are just like, I still love it. I haven't tried to sell any of them yet because I'm not 100% convinced that I'm happy with them, but.
I don't have any answers or even suggestions, but have you ever tried matting out where you painted and just sealing that and leaving the mirror empty?
I have, but I don't really know how I would go about doing that because I would have to like perfectly outline the painting. And when it's not sealed, it like, it's really delicate. Because it's acrylic on glass, so
yeah, Sanoderm.
Sanoderm. That's interesting. I don't think I've ever seen anything you've posted with that on it. I might have to creep on your Instagram.
I can send you some pictures of them.
Okay,
like I said, I've clear coated a couple of them, and like I posted them on my Instagram story, and they're still. I mean, it still gives you like that kind of chrome effect. But you can't literally see your reflection in the mirror.
Oh.
And I thought I had it down with the Mod Podge that I was using, but I took a bunch of them to Charlotte with me and I went to like clean the fingerprints off of them and my paint was staying in place, but the oil-based markers that I'm using for the outline that I thought would be fine because they're oil-based, they shouldn't just come up, that started peeling off.
Oh, man.
So I have one piece that like all of the acrylic is still in place and all of the outline like wiped off with literally water. So I don't know what the hell happened there, but dang. I've been at least trying to like make sure when I'm done with them, I seal them, I leave them sit for a few days and then I clean them first before I sell them to like make sure that they can be cleaned.
Right.
And I had a few that I was lucky with and then all of a sudden it's not working anymore. So I don't know. Because I tried picking Burger's brain about it, and he uses alpha enamel, like sign paint. But I am just not skilled enough with a paintbrush for that.
You're talking about Eric Burger?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because he occasionally does paintings on mirrors as well. I bought one from him a couple years ago.
God, Burger's.
That's kind of what ends. I know. That's kind of what inspired me to like do it though. Cause I'm like, damn, this is really cool. And I love going thrift shopping. So like find random ass like vintage mirrors for a few bucks at the thrift store and you know, upcycle them.
I've seen a few of those that you've posted. They've looked really cool.
Not to like I'm just slacking on my stocking. Do you have what's that?
I said, get with it, Rich.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. Do you want to shout out your Instagram so people know where to find what I should be looking at too?
Yeah, I got lucky with a really simple one. It's just Lauren_tattoos with an F.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. How I managed to score that, I have no idea, but I'm here for it. It makes my life real easy.
Is there anything in particular you want to plug? Are you doing any? Well, you said you had lots of traveling going on, upcoming shows, guest spots.
I don't have any guest spots lined up. Like I said, I kind of got to figure out a way to squeeze that into my year. But I am tentatively doing Cincinnati in May. I will be at the Indie Tattoo Expo in June. The Knoxville Convention in August. And then the Milwaukee Convention in
That's right. We're working October? Together. Mm-hmm. We're doing that one together, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got the application turned in already.
Awesome.
I think Cincinnati's the only one that's still tentative that I've got to get in touch with my boss about. But yeah, and then I just got to kind of figure out how to squeeze other shit in between because it's, what is that, once a month, except for getting married in September. Well, having my wedding in September. We technically already got married, but and then I'm going up to visit family in April and taking some time off in July.
That's very cool.
Anybody that
may be at Hell City in May, but I won't be working it.
Anybody that may want to book with you at these shows, can they just reach out to you on Instagram?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's honestly my preferred way to book people.
Same. I love the gram.
Yeah. I mean, we have counter people at the shop, which is awesome. I love having that privilege, but there just becomes a point where I was just kind of like, all right, let's just cut out the middleman. Like, if you have Instagram, just message me directly. That way you don't have to wait a couple of days for a response. You know, I work Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. So if somebody messages me directly on a Tuesday, I'll respond.
All right.
I got one more question.
Having to wait.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Finish what you're saying. My bad.
No, I just said instead of them having to wait for a response from the shop.
I have one more question I wanted to drop in here, just kind of off the top of my head, because I think you are probably one of the more green artists that we've talked to, and I'm curious, where do you want to see your career be at in 5 years? It's a loaded question, I'm sorry.
It is a loaded question.
It's a great question, I think.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I want to just continue to get better. I mean, I would love to see just continued improvement on like the type of projects I'm booking. Cause like I said, when I started out, like I kind of got immediately thrown in and like all of these like smaller appointments and stuff like that. And I mean, at this point, I'm usually booked out about 6 weeks and I kind of just like stop booking at that point. Cause you know, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing in 2 months. So I'm not going to commit time to somebody and then be like, oh shit, never mind. I'm going to take my day off. I don't know. I don't really have, like, obviously I love that I have more clients now that want like color traditional. But at the same time, I still appreciate my clients that want something simple, you know, it just takes an hour or whatever. So I don't really know. I definitely still plan on being a Tattoo Charlie's. There's just way too many benefits of working there. You know, I've had people tell me that, you know, like, oh, a shop like that's just a beginner shop. Like, you won't want to work there in 5 years, blah, blah, blah. But I just don't really see myself working anywhere else. You know, I'm given the opportunity to travel and go experience other shops and go to conventions, and just a lot is provided for me there. And there's just, I don't see any reason to leave.
I want to defend Tattoo Charlie's for a minute to those people that said it's a beginner shop. Like, there's like five artists that have been there for over 25 to 30 years. Like Darren, Justin, all those guys have been there forever. It's a great shop. So fuck those people.
That does not sound like a beginner shop.
No.
That sounds like a lifer shop.
I think where a lot of people say that on the surface is just because it's, I think a lot of people still view Tattoo Charlie's as like a street shop. And, you know, I feel like there's a large majority of our industry. It's just like, you know, you start in a street shop and then you're supposed to want to like goal to being appointment only and only taking two two large projects or one large project a day, constantly having these like big appointments and, you know, upping your hourly and doing all this wild, crazy stuff. And I mean, the same goes for a lot of people's opinions on like our pay structure and the fact that we're commission based and, you know, all of this other stuff. Like they hear these numbers like on the surface and immediately think like, oh, you're not going to want to work there forever.
Yeah, Mike, but, if you didn't know, Tattoo Charlie's gives everyone a paycheck. You're actual an employee.
Yeah, I remember you mentioning that.
It's.
And I could not recommend it more. It is so much less stress. You know, I get a fucking tax return. Like, what? And there's just, I don't know. At the end of the day, you know, I've got people left and right that make, you know, 15% more commission than I do or whatever, and they think that they've got it made. But they've got to pay for everything out of pocket. And I just find it hard not to see the benefit. And like, yeah, I make a lesser percentage technically than most commission-based studios, but everything is provided for me.
Buddy's got you covered. Buddy.
I have to buy my machines and my needles, and that's it.
Yeah.
I have a simple IRA that the shop matches a percentage on.
Yeah.
What?
How many tattoo artists do you know that have a retirement plan?
None. None. One. Now.
Now you know one. And this is like, why would I want to leave that? You know, he is so understanding. Like, people hear employee and they think, oh, you're working for the man. Somebody's telling you what to do. Somebody's telling you, like, you have to do these tattoos. Like, that's no, absolutely not. If I need to say no to something, I say no to it. If I need to take a day off work, all I have to do is communicate.
Yep.
And say, hey, I'm not feeling it today, whether it's a mental health day or physical health, if something comes up, if I want to just take a fucking day off. As long as I am able to communicate like an adult and say, hey, I'm going to take this day off. Okay, great. Have a great day. That's it. And I see all of these people in these independent contractor situations that are told what to do a million times more than I am.
Right.
Bitching and complaining at the idea of being an employee. Like, bro, you are an employee. You're just not getting taxed like an employee.
Right. Yeah, I mean, all the stuff you're mentioning is why I wanted to go work there. And I'm a little sad it didn't work out, but
it family.
Right. But I got nothing but good things to say about Buddy. And I agree with you.
Everybody's got these opinions too about non-tattooer shop owners, but I don't know anybody that knows Buddy. That actually knows him, that would have that opinion on him. Like, it's all people that don't know him.
He's
been a tattoo artist before, but even still, that man has honestly more respect for this industry and the history behind it and everything than most tattoo artists that I know. So like, yeah, he's not a tattooer. Like, he just runs the business side now and has for the last 20 years, but so what?
But he grew up. Cares. He grew up in the tattoo shop. His dad, you know, I mean, it's one of the oldest street shops in the country. And, you know, I don't know. I've got nothing but love and respect for Buddy. So yeah, hashtag not kissing his ass either.
Hashtag I'm kissing his ass. Are you fucking kidding me? That's so sick.
But that, you know, what you said though, Lauren, it's definitely an unpopular opinion because people are like, you're going to be an employee? Like, what the hell? And I'm like, you know, but but he doesn't treat you like you're an employee.
Mm-mm. No. Yeah. No, I mean, I genuinely feel like I have more freedom as an employee for him than most of the people that I know that are quote unquote independent contractors for other shops. Like, obviously, I know a few business owners, you know, my friend up in Illinois, I'm still friends with her. And when she hires on tattoo artists, she fully treats them like independent contractors. Like, you have your own LLC, you set your hours. Like, all I ask is that you bring a good reputation to my shop. But I feel like that is so few and far between, where people are actually treated like independent contractors.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you are going to be a 1099 contractor, that's how it should be. Like, you have your own business entity inside of someone else's business. And you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
But a lot of these people are told, like, oh, you have to work these days, or you have to work these hours, or you can only use this, or you can only do that. It's like, at that point, you're an employee. You're just getting fucked on your taxes.
Yeah. Everything that I've heard about the shop that you work at between you and Rich sounds fucking wonderful. Sounds so sick. I think a lot of people have this preconceived notion of how a shop should be ran and operated, and it looks very black and white. Like, if you don't tattoo, you should not have a shop. But I know people who own shops that aren't tattooers that run their shops great. And none of them run them as well as that. I mean, as well as your shop is ran. but it is 100% possible. And there are tons of people making strides in that vein.
Well, Mike, if you ever get a chance to go to Louisville, I highly recommend you stop at the shop, because the entire lobby is a museum to American traditional tattooing. There's some stuff in there that's amazing. Original Sailor Jerry Flash. Buddy's got a hell of a collection. And I'm sure if you want to do a guest spot there, we could probably arrange that too.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. I think I've actually mentioned it to you before, Rich, probably pre-crash, wanting to go down there and hang out a little bit. I'll shoot some messages, make a couple calls. Maybe this summer I'll hop down, if possible, because it does sound really nice, and it getting the fuck out of Wisconsin sounds great. Lauren, thank you so much for making the time to come and hang out with us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. To everybody who has listened this far, thank you. We will catch you next time.